my recording software changed my output from the to the computer stuff.
You know what would solve that? Not using a Mac.
No, no, we're not going to do that. Okay, so a couple things.
It's not logical to use Logic.
Well, I like Logic.
I'm just picking.
Logic is good fun. So a couple things. So for pretty much the past month, I have not worn my Apple Watch at all.
So how have you felt about that? Because I wear a Samsung Gear, and I feel utterly lost without it.
Believe it or not, I actually kind of like not wearing it. Because nothing buzzes on my wrist anymore. Except every once in a while. You remember when we used to carry Blackberries and we'd have that phantom vibration in our legs?
The phantom buzz.
The phantom buzz from the Blackberries or whatever? And every once in a while, my wrist will get it. It's like, I feel like my wrist buzzes because I got like a message or something. And I look, it's like, oh, I'm not even wearing the Apple Watch.
That's funny.
It's just kind of weird.
No, I mean, I'm stuck with my watch. I mean, I don't have the notification sounds or vibrations enabled on my phone. Everything's I do through my watch.
And see, and that's what a lot of people that have the Apple Watches do. They basically just make the phone completely quiet and everything goes through the watch. And to me, I kind of take the opposite approach to it. Everybody is like, well, I do it that way so I just don't feel so inclined to pick up my phone and look at it. Well, okay, so you pick up your wrist and look at it every time you get a buzz or a sound. And it's like, I am less inclined because I've missed plenty of text messages, plenty of emails, plenty of phone calls because I just don't pick up my phone when it buzzes because I don't know about it. And to me, not having it on my watch makes me less want to check it as often. At least that's what I found.
Well, I mean, I'm guilty of it. I do when it buzzes. I do check it. In fact, right now during the recording, it just buzzed. And what did I do? You can see me on the camera. I looked down and I checked it.
Yeah. And so to me, it's almost a little bit more freedom not having it on my wrist. But But there are some things that I do miss. I miss the fact that it would like keep up with your steps and stuff like that during the day. And I know the phone itself can do it, so I try to make sure I bring it at least in my pocket everywhere I go, so that it can like, kind of like keep up with the tracks or whatever. But I didn't really use it. I really wasn't into like filling the rings, like some people are. I mean, but I do.
Filling the rings.
But if I ever go like walking in the neighborhood or something, I will put it on and track the walking in the neighborhood or whatever.
Well, that's cool. So you wear it when you're doing your exercise for the appropriate data.
Yeah, but I just don't feel the. And to me, the way Apple's marketing the thing, it's almost like it's made for fitness. And fitness is great, but it's not a real big part of my life. I mean, I'll go walk in the neighborhood every once in a while, but it's not like I'm one of those hardcore gym people. Just not. I mean, that's fine if you are. I'm just not. But I need a watch that can just tell me the time.
And my watch face on my Samsung is just a clock. So when I look at it, all I do see is a traditional timepiece. But I'm one of those crazy people. I actually sleep in the thing. I let it do the sleep tracking too.
Well, see, that's what I don't do that because I'm actually scared of it. Because I know that I don't sleep well and I don't really want something to tell me that I don't sleep well.
Since Carla doesn't listen to our show, I can actually say this. And I sleep in mine, and it shows how much that I get up with our children. Like, last night, I got 4 hours and 30 minutes of sleep.
That's just crazy. Now, that's about what I get because I don't go to bed till midnight, and I wake up at like 5 in the morning. So,
yeah. My kids woke up at 5 this morning.
But, you know, I could actually use my Apple Watch for that because I don't wear it at all during the day, and so it's like it can stay fully charged. And then I can wear the whole thing at night and not have to worry about it going dead.
Dude, I never understood that because it has a large battery. I mean, mine lasts 3 days.
I mean, it's just, I think because mine is like, I guess if you go by their names now, mine's like Series Zero, I guess. It's like the very first Apple Watch that came out. And so it's like over 2.5 years old now. So the battery's pretty much shot in it. It's probably, and plus, Apple's probably throttling it because.
I was going to ask if it starts slowing down.
Yeah, Apple's probably throttling it. And no telling what the update that I just got from Meltdown Inspector on the watch is going to do to it. So it's probably just made it miserable.
Well, my watch is made by Samsung, so I don't have to worry about Spectre and Meltdown patches because they're just never going to release them.
Yeah, but yours might spontaneously combust, though, so you got to watch out for that.
That's why I wear it on my left hand.
But mine was, I mean, the first Apple Watch, it was so slow in general, and it's like they hyped up all like these different apps and stuff for your watch, and so I didn't really find anything that useful. I mean, I used the Things complication or app for some things, but I just. Before I stopped wearing my Apple Watch, there was really only one third-party app on it, and it was Fantastical because it would show the calendar and tasks on the watch face at the same time. And so it would show them both as opposed to having the calendar complication and the reminders complication. And so, and why they're called complications, I don't know, because I guess it's hard to write them. Because it complicates
the face of the watch.
So by the end of it, I say the end of it, I will wear my Apple Watch again. And you never know, I may buy another one. I'm waiting for them to see if they kind of change the look of it. It's real kind of blocky. But then again, I have a big old diesel watch now that I'm wearing. But one thing that a lot of people that wear the watch complain about, it's like, we need to get to the point where it's kind of always on screen. Because like the raise to wake with your wrist or whatever, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It doesn't always work. So.
And I do have an always on mine.
And I mean, I guess that's one way that Samsung's watch may be a little bit better experience, is because you can pick up your wrist or your hand to look at your watch to see the time, and you're always going to see the time. There's sometimes like, right, I would raise my wrist and it didn't come on, so I'd lower my wrist and I'd raise it again.
But the thing about the Samsung watch is you're not going to get third-party apps.
Yeah, but that would be fine with me because I don't use them.
I don't either. In fact, even with like Google Voice and all those other applications that I use on my phone, I can still reply to all those notifications because the Android framework for replying. I don't have to have integration to actually respond.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think the wearable market's going to be big.
Just not yet. Kind of like VR. It's not ready.
Well, I don't ever think VR is ever going to be big because I see AR more taking off than VR personally, but that's a conversation for another day, and one we've probably already had. But I'm just not – and the LTE Apple Watch, adding the LTE connection to it, I mean, that kind of helps a little bit. It's like people want a phone replacement, and basically they want a phone on their wrist, and it's getting there. But it's got a long way to go.
Yeah, they have I don't have the LTE version of my Frontier, but I do use the Bluetooth conversation piece of it quite a bit, and mainly when I'm talking to my wife working around the house or whatnot.
You Dick Tracy it?
I do Dick Tracy it. I don't hold it up. I just walk around and continue doing what I'm doing because the mics are actually fairly decent.
When I first got mine, that worked okay. I mean, the speaker wasn't real loud, and my hearing's not too great. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not real great, and so I had a hard time hearing anyway, so I'm like really up to my ear holding the watch, and so I really look ridiculous when I do it. But then whenever I read online that somebody showered with it, and so I was like, well, I'm going to start showering with mine. And I think the water kind of did something to the speaker, and so it's really not.
It wasn't as loud anymore.
It's not really loud enough at all. In fact, I think with the Series 2, they actually redesigned the speaker that, like, when it gets wet, you can, like, push a button, and it starts pumping the speaker to pump the water out of it. It's kind of cool.
That is cool.
It's just amazing to me that they can pack. And when you think about it, it's like people always make the thing. It's like we sent someone to the moon on a computer in as much computer power that's in your pocket on your phone or whatever. That's probably true about what's on the watch. There's probably enough computing power in that watch that's more than what we use to send like Apollo 11 to the moon.
Oh, well, dude, I know on mine, it's a dual core 1 gigahertz with 768 gigs of RAM and 4 gigs of storage.
I mean,
my first gaming PC was a 233 megahertz with a 1 gigabyte hard drive and 32 megs of RAM.
I mean, it's just amazing what they can just compact into that such a small size. Now, granted, yours is the size of, like, an egg crate, it seems like, because yours is, like, huge. But I like the big watch. I like a big watch. Some people don't, but I do. And the watch I'm wearing now, it's a pretty bulky watch. But there was a podcast I listened to before that kind of talked about that having an Apple Watch kind of – it sparked this guy's – it kind of rekindled this guy's love of just having a watch, and it kind of moved him into more of just buying more traditional watches. And that's kind of what it's done to me, because now it's like I'm always watch shopping. It's like I'm always looking for my next watch, and I've actually picked out my next one, and I've already planted that seed with my wife. It's like, hey.
Oh, that's funny.
And I sent her a link or whatever. I said, this is going to be my next watch. She says, well, it's on sale for Valentine's Day. Is that what you wanted?
Well, me and traditional watches, they really just don't work. In fact, I don't know if there's something about me, but I have a Seiko solar watch. You know, the one that has the solar charger and whatnot to charge.
That's actually the one that I sent her that I wanted.
I got it at the house. It works until I put it on, and when I put it on, it double ticks. So I can't wear it.
Maybe you have a heart murmur that you just don't know about.
I know, but it's actually kind of cool to watch. You watch it. It's okay. We're ticking. I put it on my wrist, and it goes tick, 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 tick. It just, it I don't know. It's crazy.
Well, I know that we generate electricity, so I'm wondering if maybe some like static electricity that's coming from you or whatever is messing up with the watch.
It may be the 16 cups of coffee I have before 8 a.m.
That's probably what it has to do with. Okay, so we talked a little bit about Apple Watches, and that's kind of what I'll start off with. But how's your week been? I mean, I know you've been kind of busy, because last week we basically didn't work because we were out for the weather. Wasn't that last week or the week before?
It was last week, but I'm paying for it this week.
Yeah, and it's
been a week.
We actually have some portable buildings rolling in, so I'm kind of excited
about
that. That's
awesome. How many of them did they get delivered?
We have basically two trailers equal one building, and we're getting 8 buildings. And so we have 6 trailers that have shown up, I think. Yes.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Three complete buildings. So there's 6 trailers with 3 buildings.
None of my stuff's been like that. I've been dealing with a lot of financial stuff and whatnot, cause paperwork, yay, E-rate, yay. And mainly some cabling projects. And, man, these wonderful, wonderful students and their Chromebooks.
They just keep tearing them up. I know I changed some keyboards, did some other stuff earlier this week, but it happens.
It's been a busy week.
Yeah, I've actually spent most of my time actually over at the elementary school. We have like one section of our building that we're actually able to move back into. They've been doing some plywood walls and stuff, and so I've had to like remount some smart boards, set up some teacher machines, get those ready to go. And believe it or not, I'm actually ahead of schedule, and I'm excited about it.
Dude, that is awesome to be ahead of schedule, isn't it?
In this whole hurricane recovery process, I think this is the first time that I've actually been ahead of schedule. Before, it's like, hey, we're moving this day. Well, that day we're actually still doing things, and so things might not be ready to go for those teachers. But I pretty much, the only thing left I really have to do is I'm waiting on 2 projectors to come in. I just need to go throw them on some cards, plug them in, point them at a whiteboard, and then I got to go distribute some smart board pins, because all the other ones got packed up, and so I'm going to distribute what I got and what I can find. But those are 2 minute things, so that's not that big a deal. It's kind of exciting, because I was a little bit worried that I was going to have to work over the weekend to take care of some things, but we were able to fit it in over the week. Now, granted, there's some things that I ignored all week long that I've had to try to fit in, but throughout this thing. But I mean, it's been pretty quiet, I guess, this week, so I was able to get all of that done, most of it done. Well, so that's good.
That's awesome, because I know you've been worrying about the buildings and whatnot when they come in since before Christmas.
Well, I mean, it's like setting a building. Okay, you think, well, what does the network guy have to do with any of that? Well, the network guy has a lot to do with it. Now, granted, we don't have anything to do with like the placement of the buildings and the dirt that goes under them and the foundation that they have to put in. But I mean, those buildings have to be wired for computers and stuff like that. And so it's like a time crunch thing. It's like they want the buildings in, and then they want to move people into them as soon as possible, because you just don't want that space to be wasted and waste that money. And so it's like we have to coordinate with all these different people to be able to get things in and get the dominoes to fall the way they need to fall, so that we can get our contractors in with our E-rate stuff to get the equipment in. Some of the E-rate equipment is actually on the way, so I'm kind of excited about that. I can get started on the switches and get those kind of configured. So basically it's like once the cabling contractor gets done, I can go in there, I can pop that switch in, plug everything in, good to go to the next one.
And so what switches did you end up going with those buildings?
We went with the Cisco's. I mean, we just kind of...
Cool.
I mean, with it being a time crunch and because of the way the funding kind of fell out, I mean, we were talking not very much difference between the Cisco's and the Juniper switches. And so... the Junipers actually came in cheaper, but it's one of those things where just like the bidding process the way it all worked out, it was kind of better to go with the Cisco ones. Some things that the way the bidding went, and the quotes and stuff like that. But then you also have to factor in, it's like, I'm going to have very limited time to get this up and going. Is this amount of money, worth learning a whole new platform in a time crunch and getting it done and figuring it out quick? And so there was a lot of different variables, but what it really boiled down to was the whole bidding process. The Cisco's basically won the bid, and so it's one of those things where it just kind of worked out for the good. I mean, but I would have been fine going either way, to be honest with you. I mean, it would have been compatible, it would have worked for what I needed, but at least sticking Cisco, it's the same management that I know. I'm used to, and I won't have to learn anything new. I mean, granted, I do want to learn Juniper. It's one of the reasons why I've changed the way I'm doing some things and changed the way I do some routing, and so that I can bring in some other vendored switches in the future to maybe like look at things that are a little bit more cost effective, because Cisco really loves their products and really wants you to pay for them. But luckily, because of this is all hurricane relief, we don't have to pay as much as what we would normally have to pay. And so it just all worked out that I get to stick with one management. And so, but.
Well, I do have a fun switch story for you this week.
Oh, is this your multicast one?
Oh, my God. Okay. For those that don't know, I'm cheap. I'm cheap when it comes to.
Very cheap.
To gear. If it does the task that it needs to do, fantastic. If it makes it harder on me, whatever. I don't care. If the user doesn't notice, great. So that's generally my stipulations. Does it serve every function that the user's going to need? Yes? Well, then we'll go with it. Well, I had a little location that I needed a 24-port switch. And, well, I have some Dell N-series here, some 3048s, some 2048s and whatnot. And I have a Dell X 1008 for 10-gig fiber connectivity. So I was like, hey, that Dell X 1000's been doing pretty good. Let me just get one of the X-series 24 ports for this location. Oh, my goodness. There is nothing similar to configuring this on the market. There is some weirdness going on in it. I'm okay with having to generalize an Ethernet port to get the voice VLAN and stuff working. But some of the weirdness, like, they want you to do things through this GUI. But the GUI won't let you do some things, and then the CLI won't let you do other things. So what I ended up having to do is I downloaded the config after I configured a single port that finally worked, taking me 3 hours to get this port to work. So I wasted a lot of time on this. It would have taken 10 seconds on any other platform. So I got one port working in 3 hours, and it worked. So I downloaded the config in text format, copy-paste, changed the interface numbers, and then re-uploaded it because I couldn't clone ports or check more than one at a time to change from within the GUI. It was just a nightmare. It has a lot of features, but it's not configured like anything. So sometimes it's worth saving a little money. Sometimes it's worth your sanity just to spend a tiny bit more.
And see, the two Dell switches that I have, I essentially bought them for my SAN, and so Dell knows that a lot of people buy these switches for SANs, and so they've actually, in their OS, they've actually built, basically you just run this one command, and you tell it what ports you want it to use, and it makes all those ports SAN ready. And so they just make it ready to go for that Equalogic. And so I had a pretty easy time configuring Dell, but my question to you is, what version of Java did you have to install to be able to open the GUI?
None.
Oh, it actually worked without Java?
Yeah, the X series don't use Java.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, they don't use Java. They do. What's really weird, though, is if you use the GUI exclusively, they won't let you use any special characters in the passwords you set for it. But if you go to the CLI, you can.
That's really weird.
The GUI and the CLI don't align.
You would think that they would use the same password policy.
I don't know why they just don't dump the N-series firmware on those things, and then they would be, like, golden.
And see, and that's the thing. This is one of the things that I kind of like about Dell switches. I mean, if you have to use a GUI, Dell actually has a pretty good GUI. I mean, granted, there's some features that I wish they would have, and for some people, they like a GUI. I mean, when it comes to Dell switches, I kind of like using a GUI because you can just kind of click, 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 go on right through it. Especially if, like, you've never used the platform before, so you don't really know the commands yet to use, you can just kind of go through the GUI and then pull the config later and kind of see what the commands did after the fact. And a lot of times, that's actually how I learned to configure a lot of things. It's like, I look at previously done configs that you either did or that somebody else did, and I was like, well, okay, what does this command do?
And so it's probably scary looking at some of my previous configs because they're probably wrong in some instances. I know they're for... I know when I first did some VLANs for the voice stuff out there at Orange Road, I was pretty green at it all, and I ended up, even on Cisco, I switched the ports to general Ethernet mode and did native ports and then tagged ports and whatnot in a Cisco. So those are probably some weird configs you may run into out there.
Yes, I do run into those, and every time that I do run into them, if I get opportunity, I do change it.
Yeah, I know. They shouldn't work.
I do. It does. It's weird, but it's like, why are these ports all trunk ports? With native VLANs set, it allowed
VLANs. Became general Ethernet ports.
I mean, they work. I mean, and so every time I come across that, I change it. But one of the configs that you sent me all the way that you kind of connect to the TACAC server, and so basically I took your config and basically just pasted it in, just put in my server IPs and address and stuff. Well, that kind of came back and bit me a little bit because I had to use a switch that was configured for TACACs in a location that I didn't really have the network. I needed to wipe the switch out to be able to get it to work, and so I had to sit there. I couldn't – the timeout wasn't timing out right. Things were just kind of going weird with it, but I finally was able to get into it and get it wiped. And this is for a location that it's like we're putting a class in this one room, but there's two people going in there, and so it's like, okay, I've got one working drop, and I got two people going in there with desktops, about five to more like probably about 10 to 12 iPads. And so it's got to have some Wi-Fi. And I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to make this work? And so I go grab an old 24-port 2960 off the shelf, wipe that puppy out, plug it in, move the uplink cable from the other switch to the gig port that goes over to this switch, and just got it all to work. But I mean, it's just like I was doing it in such a hurry. I don't even think Telnet's even configured on that switch. I just like consoled in, set everything up I needed to do, just right memed and just put it on the shelf and went about my business. I was like, these people are.
If we're all honest with ourselves, we do have that one piece of network gear that we can't remote into in our district.
Well, this one's definitely mine.
I know where mine is, and I always think, you know what? I really need to fix that. But I never do.
It's like I thought of it. It's like, well, I'll come back and finish it later. It's like
I've been trying to come back to this one for 2 years.
I probably won't go back to this one either. It's like,
yeah,
they're not,
because you'll forget about it until you need to get into it, and then you're like, crap.
Well, these teachers aren't going to stay in that room forever, and so the thing is going to come out eventually anyway. In fact, I think that portable might actually go away eventually, so I'm not putting too much effort into it. But if it ends up, we ended up staying because they've actually cleaned it up. It's not that bad. It just smells a little funky because it's just been holding old furniture for a while. And so they kind of go spray some air freshener in there, but and make sure the carpet's all good and clean. So, I mean, they could turn it into a classroom to go with these other portables that we're getting. So I may have to end up leaving it in there. So at that point, I may have to go correct it and finish it.
Well, very cool.
It's kind of crazy. But, okay, so let's do some follow-up at the end of our show here. Let's do some.
We're just going to flip the order of this show.
We're going to flip the order of it. And we'll give a sneak peek of what we're actually going to do next week, too. And we'll tell why we're doing it. But let's do some follow up on episode one of our show, where we talked about Windows 10S. And Windows 10S was just announced. It was basically Microsoft's answer to the Chromebook. And it's like, hey, we're going to see some vendors with these low price laptops coming in. And so we can kind of compete with these Chromebooks in the school. Well, it was finally announced that a vendor actually came out with like a $179 laptop. I think, wasn't it Lenovo?
Yes, it was Lenovo.
And we're getting the Windows 10S laptops for basically for education, the Chromebook competitors. And so I just kind of wanted to talk about that. And it's like, I'm kind of excited about it. I mean,
how long ago was that now?
That was a while. Back during the summer, I think.
Yeah, it was during the summer because we were recording. I was in the room without air conditioning.
But Lenovo's always had like the cheap Windows 10 laptop because basically they took the N21 and N22s and slapped Windows 10 on it and called it a day. But now they actually have the one that's, and this one's actually cut like twice in half of the price on that just by loading Windows 10S on it. And so I think it's kind of great that we're going to have another competitor. And especially for like people that are just getting kind of started in this kind of thing where they're doing one-to-ones or carts. And so now they have more of a choice between Chromebooks or Windows 10S. I'm kind of excited to see where Microsoft goes with it.
Yeah, the Microsoft apps have come a really long way. I mean, OneNote for Classrooms is phenomenal. I mean, it has a lot of really interesting things. I don't know how useful some of the new features of OneNote for Classroom are going to be without touch-enabled devices with a pen, but it's really cool the stuff that they'll be doing. I mean, they're essentially caught up to Google as far as the education space.
I know the big thing that whenever I was working at the service center and we were kind of talking back and forth, we were hosting Exchange for a bunch of districts and we were kind of talking about, well, we wanted to get out of the email hosting business because that's a terrible business to be in if you're in it.
Yes, it is.
When you think back about it, the time we were doing this, there was really no reason for the schools to pay us to host their email. Not when you have something that was free. I mean,
it was very different,
just as good, if not better, than what we were offering, especially considering that we were limited on how much space we could give them for an inbox and things like that. And plus, I do not recommend anybody managing their own spam filter. That is the absolute worst job on the planet. I mean, that is bad.
It is. It is awful. I mean, and you'll quickly realize that your filter, like over five nines of your email. It's ridiculous how much spam there is.
Oh, it's horrible. I mean, when it comes to technology jobs, I think managing a spam filter is the absolute worst. Well, I say that. I think the other worst job would be the people from, like, Gaggle that go through the email filtering and stuff that they do for education. I think that's pretty bad, too.
Oh, they have to read all that garbage.
I actually saw there was a documentary, I think, on Stars or Cinemax or something. It was called Darknet. And they did an episode, and it's kind of – I don't want to get too into it because it can kind of get kind of weird, but it's like all these different corners of the internet. Like, I mean, there's some pretty weird stuff on the internet, but they did this one episode and it kind of focused on Gaggle in a way. The episode that they did, and basically this woman, her job was to go through and look at all those images, read all those emails, everything that got flagged, and you could really tell. And then she'd go home and she has three kids and a husband, and she would talk about how it like affects her.
And so, I can't even imagine what that would do to your psyche. I mean, she's got to be on antidepressants and everything else by now.
I mean, that's just bad. I mean, that's one of those situations where I really want machine learning and AI to really step up so that a human does not have to do that job.
No, that's awful.
But that's a side tangent. But don't manage spam. But so when we were looking to get out of the email hosting business, we were kind of weighing the options between Office 365 and Google. Google Docs, Google Apps for Education at the time. Now it's G Suite. Still the worst name ever. So we kind of look at the features. Well, one of the big things was it's like Google offered Classroom, and Microsoft didn't have any kind of Classroom thing yet. And so at the time, Google had more features for education than Microsoft did. But I think now if you were to go into it and you're looking to switch to one of those platforms, I mean, they're pretty much apples to apples. When it comes to, and it, in almost one way, it's
the irony that's the expression, and that's the one person who's not in the space.
I know, and that's what blows my mind that Apple's real. I mean, their answer to this is an iPad, really? No, no. And in fact, I sent you a link earlier today that Acer apparently is making a Chrome OS tablet, and it's almost like
that's been on there for a while. I mean, it makes sense because they're going to get the profile of a Surface Book. I think that's the whole point of it.
Yeah. And so it's like I see a Chrome OS tablet and I'm thinking, one point of management, pretty much all the same apps that are necessities for these kids to use.
And think about this. Now it's a tablet that you can switch on the fly to star testing.
Yeah.
La.
I mean,
a multi-user tablet that actually works.
And it's like, I mean, that may make me rethink buying some iPads in the future. Because my Dell, the Dell Chromebook that I have, it's one of those ones that can flip around and it's got a touch screen, so it can act like a tablet. And so, but it's still kind of bulky and heavy because it's got the keyboard behind it. But when you use it as kind of a tablet, I mean, it's bad. It's not bad. Keyboard pops up on the screen just like any other tablet. And so I could really see it, I mean, happen. I would have to come up with some way that it kind of auto logs into a user so that the kids don't have to put in some kind of password or something.
Auto log in guest mode.
And so, I mean, that would be the only obstacle. But everything else, I think it would do. I think it probably has its – I mean, they can access anything that's on the web.
You know what? I bet, though, they're probably going to add another management point in the console when those products come out just for those specific use cases because they know they're going to be – hey, they're going to be so enticing for those elementary grade levels.
It's – I mean, and basically that's what the article said. It's like, look out, first and second graders.
Yeah.
Here comes Chrome OS tablets. And I'm thinking –
because, I mean, it's going to give them the familiarity of a tablet but also give them the ability to move into a more traditional computing environment that they're going to need and when they start getting in higher grades.
And so that kind of excites me. But
wow, that hurt. I just said traditional computing environment on a Chrome OS device.
It's like that commercial where that little girl's on an iPad Pro and the lady says, "What are you doing on your computer?" And she's like, "What's a computer?" I'm like, "Are you serious?"
I hate that commercial.
I know. That is like the worst commercial ever. What's a computer?
Everybody That's knows. When you just pick up your iPad and throw it at her.
Yeah. But it's like, if you look at the two platforms, Microsoft and Google, that's what we're still talking about here. If you look at the two platforms, I mean, they're pretty much on par. And so you could almost go with what you're more comfortable using because everybody used Office. So, yeah, I mean, it's I wouldn't know what to tell people. And if you're coming from an Exchange environment and you're hosting yourself, Exchange 2010 and up actually has the tools built into it. Already to move to Office 365. Already.
Yes.
Just built into it.
You can do it from the 365 panel. It's great.
And that's what, and that's kind of, that's one of them things that really gets me. There was a school that we were hosting that chose to go to Office 365, and they actually paid somebody to basically do that migration for them, and they paid a lot of money for it. I would have done it for free, just like I moved everybody else's. And I had the tools
My
right
previous
there.
Employer, they did the same thing. They weren't coming from a host exchange. They were coming from an IceWarp setup, which I don't recommend anyone using. But no. And it was going to cost $20,000 to do a migration into Exchange for this company. I'm like, give me a weekend, please. Just give me one weekend.
Yeah, that's essentially what I did for the when I migrated everybody to Google. Now, granted, that was one of my not to brag on myself, but I think that was one of my my crowning achievements at the service center when I worked there was that I basically migrated 7,500 email accounts.
To Google I'm glad Ads. You did it. I didn't have to deal with it when I came back.
And it was one of those things too. It's like, well, I mean, we have a team of people. Could nobody help you? Well, no, nobody. I mean, it's really a one person job because the tools that Google makes you to do the migration, they're not the best in the world. And so you really only want to run them one at a time. You don't really want more than one instance of this email migration running. And it just took some – basically, I did it 100 accounts at a time because if I seemed to push it over 100, it seems like the tool would kind of crater, and I don't know what got imported and what didn't get exported or imported or exported or whatever. I didn't know what got moved over. And so I basically just created CSV files 100 users at a time and just over many, many, many weekends just sort of migrated email. Now, granted – the first school I completely botched. I'm not going to lie. That's where I discovered the limitation on the amount of users you can move at the same time. And so basically that one took, but the good thing is they weren't, I mean, it was like, okay, your email account works. You can send and receive email, but your old email's not there yet. Well, it'll get there. Just wait for it. It's coming. And so it's one of those things where I can basically just rerun the import again. And if it was already there, it just sort of overwrote it or it would just ignore it. And so it wasn't really a bad botch job. I mean, I didn't lose anybody's data or anything. It just took a couple times to actually get the migration to work.
Yeah, I had that exact same issue when I was going to 365 from IceWarp. And it's when I discovered that there was a particular very important user in this company that doesn't move anything out of his inbox or delete it. And he had 20,000 unread messages in his inbox.
Oh, that's horrible.
Do you know what that does to Apple Mail?
Oh, I'm sure. It probably just goes...
Apple Mail connected over IMAP.
Oh, that is... I'm surprised worked.
It didn't half the time. And then I'm not getting my new mail. Well, gee, I wonder why. And then you'd go to refresh it, and it would take 4 hours to refresh the inbox.
Oh, yeah, when he reconnected his phone to it, and it basically had to re-download everything again.
But his name was the name of the company.
Yeah, and so you just kind of have to make it work.
You just have to make it work.
Anybody else, you would have been like, select all, archive.
Yes.
And move on.
It'll be back later.
Yeah. But so next week, this is what we're going to do next week. Next week, I'm actually having my wisdom teeth pulled out. Not that our listeners need to know that. So I will probably be, I would say, drugged up probably on our normal recording day.
And I, just for y'all's benefit, I really tried to get us to do the recording during that time. I thought it would be the most entertaining.
It would probably be kind of fun to have a lot of Vicodin or something and just kind of just almost like today, really, because I'm just kind of out there today. But so next week, we're probably going to record a little earlier. The show's probably going to drop at the same time. I'll just do the editing and do the schedule to drop. But next week, we're going to do something kind of interesting. We are going to, like, and it's kind of an interesting conversation how it brought up. We were talking about our laptop bags earlier today. And I told Chris what bag I had, and he was talking about the bag he missed. I was like, well, you know what we ought to do? We ought to do a What's in Our Bag episode where we talk about, like, the things that we carry around with us, the actual physical tools, as you would say, that help us do our job. And so that's what we're going to do next week. And we thought about doing it today, but I was like, well, I need to have some time so that I can lay everything out of the bag, take a nice pretty picture for the show notes, and I'll make a big spectacle of it. Chris is probably just going to dump it all out on the floor and send me a picture.
But, well, actually, I'll probably just pull the bag open and go, snap. That's what I have to look
for. So I'll do a nice little pretty picture where everything's kind of separated on everything that I have in my bag, and Chris is just be a big bundle of mess. But I think that's what we're going to do next week to kind of give my mouth a little bit of a break since it's going to have some extractions done from it. I don't really like when they say that. Well, well, we're going to extract your wisdom teeth. No, let's just say pull. Don't say extract, because that just sounds horrible. I don't like that.
Extract makes it sound like something was put in there wrong.
Yeah, I know. Well, it is kind of growing in sideways, so it is kind of wrong. But it's like, extraction sounds like a bad word, but it's just terrible. I don't like that word at all, extract. Or the word murmur. I never like the word murmur, but that's...
Murmur.
Murmur. I don't... It's just a weird word, murmur. But that's our show this week, as crazy as it's been. If you want to reach out to us, Chris is found on Twitter at Feeks, and I'm at Twist of Matt. You can reach out to the show at Educating Tech, or visit educatingtech.net, where you can find links to subscribe in Apple Music, Google Play, Overcast, Pocket Cast, whatever you... Castro, I think, is a new one I added. It's a new app that's pretty cool.
Castro? Really? Castro?
Castro. It's actually kind of a cool app.
Is it
app.
Written by a guy named Fidel?
It's... No. But it's kind of cool because the way Castro works, I think it's... it's not like a normal podcast app where it just kind of downloads the next episode automatically. It kind of lets you, curate. That's the word I'm looking for. Curate the podcast. It's like they show you the podcast, the description, and I think they kind of ask you, do you want to listen to this or do you want to archive it for later and stuff like that. So it's kind of a cool premise. And I think there's another one out there that's kind of like a social network of podcasts, and so you can kind of see what your friends listen to and stuff like that. But I don't know anything about that. Yeah, completely side tangent. But visit educatingtech.net if you want the links to subscribe to that or to read our show notes. We'll throw in a couple links that we talked about today. But that's our show this week, and I'll see you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.